So I will be covering this the spiritual aspect, and then Harsha Prabhu mainly will be giving a presentation, PowerPoint presentation, covering the secular, in other words, what people who are not devotees, how they relate to basically the same concerns or some of the same concerns we have within the context of Varnashram, although they don't use the word Varnashram, although they are not devotees. I'll allow Harsha Prabhu, and we also put down the name of Madhava Prabhu and Ridoy Chaitanya Prabhu, who may want to add some comment as the presentation is given.
That's Madhava.
Now, he went to the room, he may or may not, I don't know. So in other words, at least from the spiritual perspective, it's meant to give a very broad overview of Varnashram, and you know, the more we understand what has taken place in the past, you know, over the centuries and whatnot, or more recently in the last few hundred years, then it can help us more clearly understand, hopefully, what we have today, what we're dealing with, and what we have to contend with. So, naturally, because, you know, from the very beginning of Kali Yuga, we can all fairly easily understand that the system of Varnashram is in difficulty, because we have, you know, because of the battle of Kurukshetra, and because Varnashram is based on qualified leadership, especially qualified brahmanas and qualified kings. So we know how in the Bhagavatam the whole list of kings, monarchs, are listed, but then when it comes to Kali Yuga, there's no more list, because actually there are no more such qualified leaders. Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments on Varnashram a little bit in the context of Buddhism. And he mentions how Lord Buddha actually rejected, one of the reasons he rejected the Vedic literatures is that's actually because of misuse of the Varnashrama system. On the plea of sections in the Vedas that were allowing regulated animal sacrifices, the brahmanas at that time just went overboard and just interpreted in their own way and were allowing mass, you know, killing of animals, etc. So, I mean, we can trace down how Varnashram, you know, we're going back like a couple of thousand years, even, 5,000 years ago, the whole system of Varnashram, in other words, although the terminology, especially in places like here in India, were there, the system was not followed properly. Even, let's say, if we come to the time of Lord Chaitanya, one of the arguments that is sometimes presented or given by devotees is that, well, Lord Chaitanya rejected Varnashram, you see. And what's important for us to understand is that actually in that conversation of Lord Chaitanya with Ramananda Roy, the whole conversation was to try and ascertain or describe what was actually the highest. Lord Chaitanya wanted to know, to understand what is what is the highest level of reality or of the ultimate truth. And then Ramananda Roy was just going through different levels, and so what is important to understand is that Lord Chaitanya did not reject Varnashram per se, did not reject Varnashram as an institution. I mean, it's given by himself, it's given by Krishna. He rejected it as being the ultimate goal, because Varnashram is not a goal in itself. The goal is not to become a brahmana. The perfection of life is not to become a sannyasi, etc. Whereas the process of bhakti devotional service is an end in itself, in that, you know, the perfectional stage is that we will continue to perform devotional activity in the spiritual world. But Varnashram is a means to actually come to those higher platforms. So, We all recite, or we all are familiar with the very wonderful prayer of the six Goswamis, Nana Shastra Vicharanai Ganipuno, that we sing, whereby the Goswamis are glorified for having scrutinizingly studied, isn't it? The Vedic literatures, as ordered by Lord Chaitanya. What is important to note, and we'll go into details more on this, especially tomorrow, because again, this is still somewhat introductory, this first day. But an important concept is that the Goswamis of Vrindavan, and this is very important for us as devotees, especially devotees, you know, at this particular stage of our development within our ISKCON society, the Goswamis of Vrindavan were especially requested by Lord Chaitanya to extract the principles of Dharma as they relate especially to bhakti or devotional service. What we will be establishing, what we hope to establish in one of the modules tomorrow, is that actually in the same way that the principles of Sanatan Dharma, as scrutinizingly studied by the Goswamis of Vrindavan, are important for the practice of bhakti devotional service, similarly, in a similar way, there are basic and universal principles of Varnashrama Dharma, or the principles of Varnashrama Dharma, which are contained in the Vedic literatures, which are eternal teachings, are also very important for us to imbibe and to practice or to introduce. In other words, when we speak of sadharma, my understanding is that sadharma, we should see it on two levels. On the level of bhakti, devotional service, pure devotional service to Krishna, number one, and secondly, we should see these principles of dharma on the level of varnashrama dharma. Inasmuch as the principles of bhakti are eternally the same, so the system of varnashrama dharma is also the same, although because we're in Kali Yuga, it has not been followed or applied. Now, of course, I mean, later on that can bring a whole discussion that, well, you know, but Lord Chaitanya, and that's one of the arguments that people give, has just given us the holy name, Harinam, so why give so much importance to Varnashram? We'll come back to that later. I just wanted to make the point that the Goswamis were actually spending time, giving time in studying the Vedic literatures to extract, because they were ordered specifically by Lord Chaitanya to extract information and knowledge about bhakti, specifically, or especially. The point I wanted to make is that it is important for us, in addition, to also see and understand the importance of extracting from the Vedic literatures things or information, knowledge that is related also to Varnashrama Dharma. That may be a debatable point as we go along. I'll just leave it there for now. What's important to understand is that although Lord Chaitanya seemingly gave less importance, at that time there was, the caste system was very prominent, and Lord Chaitanya just wanted to introduce and flood the entire world with the holy name. He gave less, we could say, less importance or less attention, especially in the context of that conversation with Ramananda Roy, seemingly to Varnashrama. However, we see that personalities like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then afterwards Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our own Srila Prabhupada, they spoke about Varnashrama. And they actually, we read one reference a little earlier from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's another reference actually which I'd like to read very briefly. This is taken from the Harmonist. I have the reference. It's Harmonist volume number 25. In September of 1927, from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, I'll just read this, regarding Varnashrama Dharma. I just came across this recently. It is not the purpose of any patriotic Indian to destroy the Varnashrama Dharma. In bracket, the duties of four varnas and four in the four stages means ashramas. Closing back bracket. It is a duty to eliminate the impurities that have crept into the system. In order to rejuvenate Varnashrama Dharma, it will be necessary to adopt the following principles. Number one, no one's varna will be settled by birth alone. We all understand what Prabhupada also has nicely explained. Number two, the varna of every person should be settled in accordance with the nature formed by the association of early years and the course of acquisition of knowledge and experience. So this is the end of the quotation. And then it does continue. There are two other points mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that some person imbued with the power of God will again establish the true Varnashrama Dharma in accordance with the divine dispensation. Just like predictions, Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted about the holy name being established all over the world.
So,
some person imbued with the power of God will again establish the true Varnashrama Dharma in accordance with the divine dispensation. Both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta sometimes use words which were maybe not, you know, providence, I guess, right? And then number two, I think we've heard this one before, within a short time there will exist only one sampradaya or school in the realm of devotion, bhakti. Its name will be the Sri Brahma Sampradaya. All other sampradayas will merge in this Brahma Sampradaya. I'm just quoting or mentioning or referring to these authorities because, I mean, they are our direct acharyas, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And there's a book which we will be announcing tomorrow or the next day, and there's another quotation or reference by Srila Prabhupada regarding Bhaktisiddhanta and Varnashrama. And of course there are many quotes, a few of them we'll try to bring in our discourses tomorrow. The point being that our acharyas, our immediate acharyas, especially the founder acharya of our society, spoke about, made reference to Varnashrama, and specifically Srila Prabhupada clearly wanted that it be established. I'll just keep this very short. Over the centuries we have seen how there are different, you know, how different oppositions have been there to the system of Varnashrama. I mentioned about Lord, Buddhism, for example. Even Buddhism today rejects Varnashrama. Then, you know, the Muslim invasion, specifically in the context of India, the Christians, the whole British actually tried to destroy the whole, you know, Vedic culture in so many ways. There's some very interesting references in that respect. And last but not least, some of our own Indian personalities, or, you know, people from India themselves, have tried to destroy, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making a direct reference in this quotation, that it is not the duty of any Indian person to try and...
A patriotic Indian,
yeah, to do away with or destroy the system. Rather, we should correct the impurities within the system. I mean, this is important to hear and to understand. So in other words, I'm finishing on this point, that from the spiritual perspective, it is clear, you know, that it is there in our Shastra about Varnashrama. It is something that has been referred to by various authorities, and especially by our immediate acharyas. And therefore, just based on this very simple observation, it should be something of concern to us. You know, if it was of concern to our acharyas, then whatever is of importance to them naturally should become of importance to us. And what they requested or desired, naturally we should try as faithful followers and disciples also put into practice. So that's my small presentation on the spiritual perspective, let's say, of Varnashram in this particular context. And I don't know if we should go now directly to the secular outlook.
You could see if there are some questions now.
Maybe one or two brief questions.
Does anyone have any questions on these points or comments?
Or they could come later also.
Okay, then we can move on.
Yeah. Harsha Prabhu, yeah. Yes. Maybe just to give a little cue for what is coming up right now, I'll just finish on this point that especially we see that in the presentation or the different instructions given by Srila Prabhupada. Not only have our spiritual preceptors given emphasis on the spiritual aspect of Varnashram, but like, you know, Prabhupada has mentioned, first is food, isn't it? In other words, Srila Prabhupada very much understood and wanted that the, you know, material external aspect also be in place. Okay.
Any question, Mother?
Can that be blocked? Okay, sorry.
We have a small Varnashram research team in Secunderabad. And we were trying to work out various presentations related to Varnashram and the inspiration of Maharaj. And we made a series of presentations, not a big series, just to start off with 2-3 series of presentation. Why cities are not the best places to stay? So I just modified that presentation to the secular outlook, why Varnashram has to be implemented. This is a structure. We'll just see what the secular approach, why cities are not the best place to stay. A few points on the planet in trouble. And the world is looking for solutions and they are trying to come out with some solutions like eco-villages, etc. What are the shortcomings? They themselves know what are the shortcomings, but they don't know the solutions. So, conclusions and final thoughts, which I should be covering by 150. This is a conversation between Prabhupada and the disciples here. Prabhupada is asking, everyone should come to Varnashram, everyone should come to the farm. Why only householders? Rameshwar Prabhu is asking, in America there is a very big emphasis on getting people to join us by moving into our temples. Temple presidents are very eager to get as many people to move in as possible. But in the long run, most people cannot come up to the standard. Prabhupada, therefore I am advocating that they should come to farm. So they have to be encouraged to have a little bit of Krishna consciousness in their own home, make their own a temple. Rameshwar Prabhu was asking. Prabhupada said, no, let them go to the farm, New Vrindavan. Many people, most people in the world, they are Grihamedis and they cannot give it up so easily. Rameshwar Prabhu, right? Prabhupada says, no, you remain. Come here with your wife, children. You remain Grihamedi. Jagdish Prabhu is asking, New Vrindavan is very austere. If we build little bungalows with modern convenience, is it okay? Prabhupada, oh yes, no problem. Harishwar Prabhu is asking, should we try to make an effort to have our own householders go and live on the farms? A special effort, if it is ready to do that? Like subsidies, what we were trying to. Rameshwar is still asking, but most people have jobs. What? So many people already have the jobs in the families. All right, let them not come, but those who are unemployed, let them come. But what about those who are having jobs? For those people who already have their jobs, instead of proposing that job, they'll be very soon jobless. Don't worry. They will come. They will be obliged to come. Now they have got job, but as soon as the days are advancing, Kali Yuga, they will be jobless. Prabhupada took a secular outlook in this. Prabhupada also predicted that in 50 years to come, the whole civilization is going to crumble because of the oil problem and all that we will address. A lot of evidence is available now. The documentary that we are presenting today evening, 4 to 6, also has covered some of the evidences. The next documentary plan that we are working on, Make Vrindavan Religious, also will cover in a wide aspect of what are the problems that planet is facing and all these aspects.
Could you describe what you mean by the term the secular approach? I didn't understand what that term meant.
Yeah. Spiritual Outlook was proposing that why to practice Krishna consciousness we need to have agrarian based Varnashram Dharma, I mean Daivi Varnashram Dharma, while secular outlook goes to other areas of, if we don't have that we can't survive. I mean if we don't look at this kind of a solution, there's no way out. It's the only solution. To come to that conclusion, I'm approaching different areas of planet in trouble and why cities are not the best places to stay and what are the solutions they're offering, then coming to the Daivi Varnashram.
Secular approach to, what do you mean, approach to what?
To conclusion of Daivi Varnashram.
Institution.
Yeah, to conclude that Daivi Varnashram is the solution, ultimate solution.
Social
for example, many people like Al Gore and so many people, they are proposing it's 11th hour, it's high time, and so on and so forth. But solutions are not known. So I'm taking all those aspects to propose that very important solution. And also a question was raised that why is it self-sufficiency and Varnashram Dharma, is it same? So that also a little bit point will be raised. Few Prabhupada's quotes here. These towns and cities are flourishing on account of having so many industries, slaughter halls, brothels, cinema clubs and nightclubs. So city is mainly based on these things. It is said in Shastra that to live in a forest is Sattvaguna. Sattvaguna people have got tendency to live in a secluded place, solitary place without any disturbance. That is sign of Sattvaguna. And to live in cities, big cities, skyscraper building, that is Rajoguna. And to live in brothel, in the liquor shop, in the slaughterhouse, this is Tamoguna. Prabhupada in another place says city is made of, city is based on slaughterhouses. In Indian context, there was a first war of independence in 1857, mainly due to use of beef fat in the cartridges. The sepoys were told to use the guns which contained beef fat. Yeah, they were supposed to bite a bullet and then shoot it. So the sepoys, they made a big revolt against this, and that was called the First War of Independence. It became a huge revolt all over India. It was well known as 1857 First.
Is it everyone following this explanation? Can you, Madhava, can you loudly, can you explain that?
Well, in 1857, the British, when they recruited the army, the Indians in the army, and they were working for the British army, then they were telling, they had cartridges which you needed to bite and put into your guns, and then you got to shoot. So it was greased with, it had beef fat, in it. That's what they say. There are two opinions about it, but the popular opinion at that time that it had beef in it, beef fat in it. So the sepoys at that time revolted that we are not going to do this. We are not going to take beef into our mouths. We are not going to use this. So they revolted, and which was the first sepoy mutiny of 1857, which started somewhere in Lucknow, right? And spread near Barrackpore, yes, and spread all over India. And the British were not able to stop it. I think later on they got sick.
Yeah, they made a lot of attempts, and finally they tried to curb it.
Crushed it.
But still, the fire was there, and that's how Mahatma Gandhi, based on non-violence, and he was very against of the slaughterhouse. He said, "I don't want independence. I want to stop the slaughterhouse."
I don't want independence?
Yeah, he said independence is secondary. First stop the slaughterhouse.
First stop slaughterhouse. What I understand, or what I get from here, just in case, you know, just to make it more clear, is that by nature, people, for example, here in India, who have had for centuries that culture, even though Varnashram has been maybe not followed ideally as it should have, to deviate in such a way, I mean, if we look at what is happening now, of course, the deviation has gone way overboard, but to just even put some animal product in their mouth, you know, as they were requested by the British Army, caused a whole revolution. In other words, they still had some attachment and respect for some basic principles connected with Dharma. And if we analyze, you know, how far we have come now, where so many people from India, you know, what's happening in India that will be covered possibly, are not only allowing the slaughter of animals, but themselves also, you know, eating beef and whatnot. So the degradation, I mean, you know, has come quite extensively. Someone had a question.
How does this particular argument that there was a war because of that relates to that cities are flourishing on slaughterhouse?
I'm coming to that point. Yeah, the connection was that cities, Prabhupada mentioned that cities are based on slaughterhouses. And till today that problem exists. And why we raised this first war of independence was that how people naturally are against, but we don't know still things that are happening in the cities. If we clearly understand how cities are working, how economy is working, and how all these details, we clearly can understand that cities are really not the places to stay for devotees. So I'm coming to the point of...
Well, there's one statement in the first canto, 11th chapter, verse number 12, the purport, which the Prabhupada says, mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses are the necessary paraphernalia for the modern metropolis. And the Prabhupada says this in that chapter where Krishna comes back to Dwarka. In that purport, he says, and he says that actually if you analyze it, because of having slaughterhouses, you're having, because of that, you don't have cows. When you don't have cows, whatever the cow gives you, you have to take it from industry. You have to make an industry for that. Everything. You take anything and it starts with the cow, and it, when you don't have it, then you have to replace it with something which you make for the modern. You have to make a whole industry for that. So you look, you have lack of nutrition, then you have a whole nutrition industry. And it still doesn't suffice, then you have diseases, then you have a medicine industry. And then you have food problem, then you have water problem because you don't have cows, because you need more water to, for your crops. And crops are doing bad, so you pump in so many other things too. So it goes on and on and on. And in a very small area, the productivity increases far, far more if you have cows and their byproducts in it. Whereas if you want to do that artificially without the cow, you'll have to make a huge industry. And still it is not possible. So actually, cities are based on slaughterhouses.
And we are part of the problem. Okay. Why we are part of the problem is this, the food and cosmetics, the whole cosmetics that we use, products that we use contain still beef products, beef byproducts. Very shocking. Many things are derived from this, this mainly trying to explain what are the things are animal origin. Food, this is just a partial list. Ice cream contains gelatin, chocolate, biscuits and baked foods, chips, sugar, and now marketed as pure cow ghee contains animal fat. Very shocking, evidences are available. We can't believe on what is happening. We can't believe on products. It's all just cheating and cheated business. Ice cream contains beta-carotene, that is nothing but found in tissues of cows, gelatin, emulsifiers. Many times we see it contains added emulsifiers and so forth. They all are animal origin. Chocolates contain cocoa, not only gives chocolate, gives really smooth texture despite high standard fat content. Presence of stearic acid is there in chocolates, which is mainly derived from beef. Stearic is derived from tallow, which is beef fat. Water filters from cow bones. Cow bone is very prominently used in water filters. Very, very prominently used. The juice that we see, api and all these juices, they all contain animal byproducts. So we can't believe on any products that are available. More sources, I have a list of sources anybody wants to see. Even blood is used. It just gives a glimpse of how we are, you know, a part of the problem in the city living. This goes on, this is all partial list again. So education system is also a major problem here in the cities that is being dealt more in detail tomorrow called Madrasa Education as one of the modules. We have Macaulay's quote, which not many might be aware of. Macaulay was on a, you know, supposed to submit a report to Queen Victoria in 1835. So he came to India, traveled all over India and studied the whole situation here, and this is what he had to say at the end in the British Parliament in 1835. He says, I have traveled across the length and breadth of India and have not seen one person be who is a beggar, who is thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country, such high moral values, people of such caliber that I do not think who would ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is her spiritual and cultural heritage, which is nothing but Varnashram Dharma. I propose that we replace her old and ancient education system and culture, for if the Indians think that all that is foreign in English is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and will become what we want them, truly dominated nation. So today, the whole education system is completely replaced, and Prabhupada very clearly mentions education is nothing, the schools are slaughterhouses. So we need an alternative education system, which is, as I said, proposed, will be proposed tomorrow as Varnashram education. So this is one major.
I can just add a little thing as a poetic justice to Lord Macaulay. His grandson became a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And this is mentioned in My Prabhupada book by Lokanath.
So, even Macaulay would be saying, he probably took Prasharam on his way across India somewhere. So, the first half is glorifying the culture. Mm-hmm. So, he got some benefit from that.
I have 10 minutes now. I won't go in detail of this issue, although a lot of evidences are available. I'll also refer to some of them. But just briefly touch upon what are the problems at present in the world. Al Gore explains very nice allegory or an example. He said there are two bowls. One bowl of water is made to boil and it becomes very hot. It's boiling very hot. And you take a frog and put it into water, the boiling water immediately jumps out because it senses the heat. There's another bowl of water. You put the frog inside, it's cold water. It will sit there, start burning, boiling the water. It will sit there, water keeps increasing, the temperature keeps increasing, it keeps adapting to the temperature, it sits there. At a point comes, it's boiling, water is boiling, it will still adapt and sit there until somebody picks up and puts it outside. So, similarly, planet is in trouble, we are not able to realize that. A lot of evidence are available. Prabhupada also predicted this. So, with this, a lot of alternatives are coming out, which is the next issue. What are the problems? I'll just briefly touch. One is a false economy that we are living in. A lot of evidence is available. Madhav can also put a point here. Prabhupada also has a quote on this, which is this. Paper currency, he said, cheaters and cheated. It's just cheaters and cheated business in paper currency. Real wealth is cattle and grains. We have other evidences deteriorating, oil and food security. Oil is, the whole economy is based on oil today. And once we were discussing, like, even the button contains, button is made up of petroleum. Food is supplied through petroleum vehicles. Everything is based on petroleum. If petroleum stops, which is going to happen, and there's a lot of science available now, there'll be a big crash. Food security is, there's a lot of videos available on food security. And health is cancer is becoming the major problem in the society. I work in a hospital, I know what's happening there at present. A lot of organ transplantations and so many things are being planned. Rising temperatures and rising seas, emerging water shortages, pollution, natural systems under threat, they're all early signs of decline of the whole modern civilization. References are Inconvenient Truth, 11th Hour, there's a movie called 11th Hour, Food Security, so on and so forth. Clearly describes how bad is the situation right now in the world of. One or two points on false economy. India's grain harvest, squeezed both by water scarcity and the loss of cropland to non-farm users, has plateaued since 2000. This is just recent information. Which means water scarcity is, water is sucked out from the earth to feed the farms, which is totally artificial. That's 50% of the food produced in India is depending on this at present. And it has become the leading wheat exporter. Sucked out. So this explains the leading wheat exporter.
The last year was a wheat crisis of the world. Because India had to go out to the world to buy wheat. And they say by the year 2025, India will be rice importer. And if in India, and by that time, it will be one of the probably the largest population. It starts importing wheat, rice, and the majority of the people are rice eaters. It's going to create a major world crisis around the world. Already last year, we had a major wheat crisis. India had to go shopping all over the place to buy wheat. And finally, they bought wheat from Australia, which was actually meant for cows, for their cattle.
and that was the week which was survived.
There are a few individual thinkers across. One of the well-known is Ted Trainer and rest of us. Some of the quotes I quickly copied here. Global economy is basically a system of massive but legitimate expropriation. 6% of world income goes to the richest 20%, while the poorest 20% receive only 1.3% of it, etc., etc. Over 1.6 billion people were found to be getting poorer each year in terms of this economy, paper economy. And most of it goes to corporate wealth. He goes on to say there are two major mistakes, fundamentally mistaken commitments built into the current economic system, that is market and growth. Everything is based on market economy. There is no exaggeration to say that market forces are responsible for more deprivations of human suffering and ecological destruction rather than any other single factor. Gandhi said that rich must live more simply so that poor may simply live. So he quotes that very often. And two fundamental wrong things. Fundamental wrongs, he says, in the society at present is commitment to the market principle. We are committed to market principle. We are all out surrendered to the market principle. And associated notions such as competition, individualism, and maximizing freedom of corporations. An even bigger mistake is to do with the taken for granted commitment to affluence and growth. So a lot of solutions are thought of for a lot of problems existing, and major is the eco-village movement across the world happening. Ted Trainer continues to say industrialization is the major culprit. The whole capitalistic society is based on a philosophy that we all can have Mercedes-Benz one day. However, the limits of growth analysis, what he says, is makes it clear that satisfactory and sustainable society cannot be affluent, industrialized, consumer society. It cannot be. So, alternative, he says, is it should be a much simpler, non-affluent living standard. Small, highly self-sufficient local economies, mostly using local resources to produce to meet local needs, with little trade between regions, let alone between nations, highly participatory and cooperative systems, alternative technologies which minimize resource and environmental impacts. We need a totally different economy, which is not driven by profit or market forces, in which there is no growth, and which much economic activity does not involve money. So Ted Trainer concludes that a sustainable society must therefore be defined in terms that extend well beyond taking social control over the market. It must focus on notions of simplicity, cooperation and self-sufficiency, and a long period of negative economic growth culminating in a steady state economy. Very good thinking, but practically not implemented. Some of the concepts are being implemented. The concept majorly is on ecology, and that's why this eco-village network. A lot of eco-village network revolution all over the world, and few are just to mention here. Global eco-village network, why eco-villages, trying to create why eco-villages. But there is a problem in all. They have some principles. Eco-villages, they look for these principles. Local organic food production should be there if it has to, certify as an eco-village, then these are the basic criteria. Local organic food production, ecological building, renewable energy systems, cooperative social economies, inclusive decision-making processes, cultural and spiritual diversity, integration of holistic healthcare, global networking, but no crop protection. Ted Trainer, there is little, many of them are clearly understanding the shortcomings of eco-village network. It includes wide diversity of initiatives, many of which are not consciously intending to pioneer a new world order. he says again, many eco-villages simply involve people in trying to build better circumstances for themselves, often within the rich world, in quite self-indulgent ways. There are no principles, which calls for principle-based, God-conscious communities. So conclusion is Daivi Varnashram.
So, that's it. So okay, anybody has any comments or questions on this presentation?
Probably. Question. We see in the teaching of Prabhupada, philosophy is very much fundamental about these things, and more orthodox. But sometimes, like when he came to America, he would eat from this rich frozen vegetables with Sally, Agarwal, and his family. You know? And sometimes he would eat in grains and grains, or tell his disciples it doesn't matter, it's everything is contaminated anyway. And so, how to formulate both things? Because Prabhupada said both. He said we should grow our foods, but he also said it doesn't matter. Like you can take when you reach.
Who wants to answer that? Anybody?
Well, there's a difference between detail and principle, right? Like if you look at what Prabhupada was teaching in general, and then if you look what he might have said at some devotees in a specific situation, where they were starving on the railway platform, that okay, you can get those samosas and things like that, it's different. Just like you will find Prabhupada is always preaching in his book that the devotee should only marry once, But he to a specific Mataji at one point, because the guy took sannyas after 6 months, and it's okay, you can marry again. But in terms of what he taught, then you have to see what is the principle and what is the detail. Principle that do you want to eat all the time contaminated food? Do you want to offer contaminated food to Krishna? Prabhupada said if you grow your own food, Krishna would be pleased 1,000 times more. If the whole offering comes from the devotee and not from the dirty. So in that sense we have to, but we're not fanatic. Some situation we have to preach this, that, but it cannot become like a credit card for, all the time deviating from the principles that, then we're going to miss in the long run.
But many of the incidences you spoke about has to be seen in context. There was a specific context why Prabhupada said that to a particular person at a particular time. And actually, that our spiritual, we understand spiritually that the guru gives instructions to particular disciples according to a particular time and circumstance. And it's meant for that disciple. So there are some principles which are general and some principles which are specifically for specific disciples at specific times. Is that okay? Does anyone else have any comments or questions?
This beta carotene contains animals on the inside. You said beta carotene is animal product.
Beta carotene is an animal. In chocolates, that is in reference to chocolate. To stabilize or equal to make it equal blend, they use stearic acid, which is product of tallow derived from cow beef fat.
So then Fanta has beta carotene inside. Fanta
soft drink. Yeah. Many soft drinks. We can't believe because they contain stearic acid. It's clearly mentioned. Shaving creams contain allantoin, which is beef fat.
It's interesting, but
soap contains animal fat. There's a huge thing called rendering industry. All slaughterhouses, the byproducts. Actually, beef is a byproduct. This is a major market. Major market now. So all the byproducts are, including the blood, the horns, everything is ground and
steam.
They also think that cow is a source of all good things, but in a different way.
And we understand also that what we take into our body affects our consciousness. So practically speaking, if you don't produce your own food, your consciousness is being affected by all of these things, which you have no control over. You know, in the West specifically, you buy your food from the supermarket, you don't know. You're taking in all these things, and it's affecting your consciousness. So if we want to, you know, Prabhupada mentions, like, for instance, we're not even supposed to eat chocolate or whatever. You know, these subtle things are there, and it seems like some devotees think, let's take it to an extreme. But what the point is that it's all about consciousness and how consciousness can be affected in very subtle ways. And when it is affected in subtle ways, then we can't perceive properly spiritual truths and we can't act properly. So we're being hindered every step of the way in terms of our spiritual realization because of the way the world is set up.
Health is a major problem because of consumption of animal fat. Major problem. Cancers, heart diseases, they're all because of animal fat consumption, which people don't know where it's happening. The source is not known because everywhere it's animal fat.
And it's not just the whole overall city is just, you know, asking for disease, you know, living in the city. And I've seen in my personal life, you know, that when I started to live on farms and remote places, I mean, that's one of the principles of bhakti, you know. Bhakti is even, you know, apart from the rest of the, we go there to preach, but we don't live. That's one of the principles of bhakti, living in a holy place, a secluded place. And I can see what it does to my sadhana, to my health, to everything. You know, it's becoming conceivable now for me to practice with Krishna consciousness without cows. There's a whole point you will not understand if you're not close to the cow. It's very difficult. Unless you're like a full-on, you know, 108% preacher, and okay, but that's a very few. Most of us are material desire, we need to dovetail, you know, all sorts of things. And for that, it becomes, you know, so your whole 20 years that you're going to spend in the Grihastha ashram, you know, will make you a madhyam, so you can take some yas and become a guntam. Instead of remaining for another, you know, 20 years and, you know, kind of study career, and at the end, trying to become a madhyam, and you take one across and sannyas. You know, because, you know, when you get that purification, it's still going on while you go to the Yastasha before everybody. I mean, it's just nicer. And the preaching, because also the way we've been preaching in the West has always been in the city, because, you know, if you're going to preach in 1969 in the United States, you go to some village, you know, I don't need no damn Bhagavad Gita. No, but I mean, obviously you're going to go to the city where you're going to find some alternative thinking people, artists, hippies, this, that. And so we were establishing the temples in the cities. When we came to places like India and other places, that trend continued to preach in the cities. But in India, you can go to a small village and you'll be very successful preaching. And actually, people are generally more pious in the village. You know? And so ultimately, I'm trying to find that quote. This is something I've heard that I'd like to research. If anybody has any information on that, maybe somebody will know. The Prabhupada says, we will have ultimate success without good distribution when it's done out of the Buddha.
If Prabhupada mentions about to go in your bullock cart 10 miles in every direction from the farm, when he was establishing the farms, he said that the Sankirtan should be like that. We take the bullock cart and you go from village to village, distributing the books like that, and people will see we're living very simply, we're very happy, very satisfied, and they'll be impressed to see that people are living happy and simply. So we've come to the end now. Are there any other questions?
Yes. Prabhupada was studying that sugar is contaminated, but we see that most of the items who make sweets with sugar, even devotees. So will you just throw some light on why sugar is contaminated, whether it should be consumed or not?
Well, it's been discovered that most white sugar is refined using charcoal produced from cow bones, or calcium produced from cow bones. There are other alternatives. There are some places that don't use that, but the majority of places are using it. So there are alternatives, especially here in India. You've got gaur, you've got mishri, different things you can use in India as an alternative to white sugar. In the West also, there are alternatives, but you have to seek them out. In general, it's a question of Prabhupada in some time sometimes would allow, in circumstances where there was nothing else, he would allow certain things to happen. So these are all questions that need to be addressed specifically to a specific time and place. What is there available? Can you get an alternative or not? like that. So in general, we should try to avoid those things, and that's the purpose of this whole, that was why Prabhupada wanted us to create these alternative communities, that we produce our own things, which are produced with love, not just offered with love, but actually the seed put into the ground, the land ploughed with love, the seed put into the ground with love, cultivated with love. It's a much more inclusive system. So that's the ultimate thing that we should do. So we have to be practical. In the cities, there are certain things we have to, you know, live with certain contradictions to do the preaching. And for the preaching, is it Prabhupada said you can even eat cow flesh? I heard, maybe I'm wrong there. Correct me if I'm wrong.
This is
Bhaktisiddhanta said.
This is a cow flesh. He says, give them meat if you need to, but get them to chant Hare Krishna.
So, you know, there are the wildly, you know, things that we would never even think about doing. But in an emergency situation, according to time, place, and circumstances, the sadhus recommend certain things. So we have to be practical and see what we can do. So that's it then. We've got to stop now. So if everyone would like to come back at 4 o'clock in the next room, classroom number 4. No, 4. The schedule has been changed because Prasadam is... We were going to stop earlier.
4 o'clock, room number 3.
Yeah. We were going to stop earlier, but now we've put module 3. Was this module 3 or 4?
3.
This is module 3. We just had module 3, which would have been this afternoon. So now it's just module 4 this afternoon, starting at 4 o'clock next door. Thank you very much.
One thing is that we were told that better not to leave anything in the room if it is not safe, even when it is locked. So it's up to you.
And besides, we're going to be next door when we come back. There may be somebody else in this room, so you should take everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.